one broadcast at a time.
Shalimar, War, and Too Short. Come to Bethesda Theater in the month of August. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
I'm Candy Shannon, and you are tuned to Member Supported WPFW, Washington.
And welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, August 20th. I'm Dave Rabin, joined by my esteemed co-host, Rev Ray Valencia. We have a good, important show for you today. And what are the challenges and opportunities for the labor movement in this electoral season? We'll be joined by Gene Bruskin, 45-year veteran of the labor movement as a local union president, organizer, and campaign coordinator for numerous local and national unions. He has done extensive international labor solidarity work, is the founder of the National Labor Network for a Ceasefire in Gaza. Very, very important work. He also has a second incarnation, if you will, as a creator of musical theater. His latest is The Return of John Brown. If we can get to it at the end of the show, we want to talk with him about that. But first, we are in our fundraising drive, as I'm sure you are undoubtedly aware. We'd love to hear from you. The call-in number is 202-588-9739. You can also go online and donate with your debit or your credit card or PayPal. WPFWFM.org. We have a $500 goal. We really need your help, folks. We are under attack, I think you can say. It appears that we are suffering a cyber attack of sorts. Many of our functions are being impeded by what appears to be a coordinated attack. This is not the first time this has happened to Pacifica. The Ku Klux Klan went after our sister station in Houston years ago. We are, in a sense, it's kind of a compliment, I think. We are saying things that folks, the mainstream does not want to hear. We are outside the bubble. We are outside the capitalistic mainstream that folks are used to hearing. We're non-commercial. We are listener sponsored, and it's not surprising. And here we are, and we need your support. We need to keep the lights on. In addition, we are in the process of attempting to move, and we are in particular need of your help. And I am curious about the thoughts of my wonderful co-host, Ray Valencia.
Wow, I'm just thinking, here we are, a news organization reporting on stories that do not get enough attention in the mainstream media. And at the same time, we're getting hacked. So I can't imagine a better time than ever than to support community radio right now. I think we're all stakeholders in this. It's a very interesting, contentious election season. I think it's really important to keep holding government accountable, keep holding lawmakers accountable. And that's what we do here at Pacifica Radio. And so any kind of support that you can offer to help in this kind of pursuit in equality, democracy, fourth estate, all those things, the pillars of what we hold dear here when we talk about what is freedom. We need your support. Come to WPFWFM.org. Please make a donation. I understand things are tight. There is inflation. We're all feeling it at the grocery store. You can become a sustainer for small amounts each month, for the cost of what that smoothie sets you back or that latte. It's just all really appreciated. We're all stakeholders in this. What we're doing is really important work. Many of us are volunteers. And yet we have expenses, we have a payroll, a staff to keep everything online and going. so we can continue to shine a light on stories that are important for our community.
Wonderful. And the number to call, if you care to call, 202-588-9739. You can go online, wpfwfm.org. PayPal is possible. On our website, we've got a $500 goal. Please help this important resource, WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. Keep us on the air, folks. We need your help. We know this is maybe not the most enjoyable thing to hear these fundraising pitches, but it's in lieu of, you know, being inundated with commercials ad nauseum, I think we can say. So please show the love. Please help us out and donate what you can. And on with the show. Labor is clearly on the map in this electoral season. Last week, in a technically challenged interview, I think we could say Tesla and social media giant X, formerly known as Twitter CEO Elon Musk, interviewed Donald Trump, where the former president praised Musk for firing workers who go on strike. The United Auto Workers, within 24 hours, filed a complaint. It is, in fact, illegal for employers to threaten workers that go on strike. It's a protected collective activity to, in fact, go on strike. Labor is clearly in the spotlight in this contentious political season. And what are the challenges and opportunities for the labor movement in this political season? Joining us to talk about the subject is Gene Ruskin, 45-year veteran of the labor movement as a local union president, organizer, and campaign coordinator for numerous local and national unions. He's done extensive international labor solidarity work and is the founder of the National Labor Network for a Ceasefire in Gaza. And in a second incarnation, Mr. Ruskin is creating musicals. I mean, I just love it. I'm a musician, and I just got a real kick out of this. His latest creation, The Return of John Brown. We want to get through all of the labor information and then get to his creative outlet as well by the end of the show. Gene Ruskin, welcome to Community Watch and Comment.
Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Way to shoot him, shoot himself in the foot. I mean, what do you make of it?
You know, I think both Trump and Musk are so far away from the what it means to be a worker on the ground, you know, and what it means to try and organize a workplace, that this is sort of kind of talk that they throw around all the time. And probably, I'm not even sure their campaign staff noticed it, but certainly the UAW did. And the way the law works is
and we should say UAW is the United Auto Workers that has come out very strongly in support of Harris Walz.
Right. And the United Auto Workers have, you know, a long tradition. But most recently, there through a whole series of events, they ended having their first ever national one worker, one vote election. Before, it was always delegates at a conference. And as a result, they had a new leadership, took place maybe a couple years ago, led by a guy named Sean Fain and a whole group of leaders. And they sort of had a transformative role in the labor movement. And what they did in this case, Sean Fain and their leadership heard this interview, and under the law, you cannot threaten to fire people for going on strike or for organizing. That's a very clear, unfair labor practice. And so the UAW was able, through a broadcast like this, to file a legal challenge with the labor board that must be heard, evidence must be presented, etc. They don't really believe that this is going to actually fix anything, but that's just sort of a slap in the face. These guys can't just walk around insulting workers and unions.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of extraordinary. Sean Fain of the UAW, United Auto Worker President, spoke at the Democratic National Convention last night. I think he was wearing a, I didn't get to see it because I was preparing for the show. I'm reading that he read or he wore a red t-shirt stating that Trump's a scam. That's kind of a stretch because Trump has never been a worker in order to be a scab.
I think it's
kind of a statement that, you know, we've got Sean Fain, a major union president speaking versus Hulk Hogan, who's wearing some kind of t-shirt that is not a labor related or United Fight president, going, what a great fighter Trump is. You know, this is a union man, an important union president, speaking at the DNC. I think it's important to note the contrast. I think this endorsement by UAW and their attack on the Trump Musk interview, it's going to make it an important possibility for union leaders to portray Trump as anti-labor. And, you know, there's often can be a gap, I think, between leadership of the unions and the rank and file, and, you know, many of whom the rank and file, you know, might have relatively conservative leanings. And this is going to enable leadership to say, hey, these are a couple of billionaires, multi-billionaires, at least Musk is. We're not sure about Trump. But I mean, I think it's an important marker of what happened last week in that interview. For some reason, I'm not hearing you, Gene. Have you got your mute on?
What's important about Sean Fain and the UAW is that he has taken a really, in some ways, a break from traditional labor leaders, and that he talks not just about his membership, but he talks about the working class. He sees the union representing the broader working class. Only 6% of people are in unions. And the other thing that Sean Fain did, both in his talk at the convention, but also during the recent bargaining with the Ford and Stellantis and General Motors, he broke with the myth that the prosperity of the company and the prosperity of the workers are the same. That's the excuse that has been used for years now to say that, you need to take a big wage cut now to save the company, and that's the best thing for you. He said, no, you know, like, we're going to stand up for what we deserve, and you're going to get yours. You already have yours and plenty more. So he sets a good example, which is very different than what we're seeing, unfortunately, with Sean O'Brien at the Teamsters. And this is, I think, a challenge that we have to move on. And what's happening inside the Teamsters, as many people know, Sean O'Brien, the president of the Teamsters, who did a tremendous leadership in the negotiations with UPS a couple of years ago and got a major contract victories, went on the Republican convention and gave, and not too bad of a speech, but he gave a lot of credibility to Trump and to Vance. So there's a reaction inside the Teamsters, the Black Caucus of the Teamsters, and there's probably a few hundred thousand Black members in the Teamsters, came out in support of Biden and disagreed with O'Brien. And now there's a whole movement, Teamsters against Trump. So the rank and file is reacting, and there's a lot of pressure on Sean O'Brien not to make the big mistake of going with Donald Trump.
Right, and one could imagine after this Musk interview with Trump, that the Teamsters are, I would say, highly unlikely to support Trump after that very union questionable interview, and I guess it's normal that the Teamsters don't endorse until after both conventions. And the Teamsters, I don't think O'Brien's going to be speaking at the Democratic convention, but someone from the Teamsters will have a presence.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, some are saying that it's somewhat of a ploy on the part of a Teamster to get more out of the Harris and Walls. But time will tell. And I think, you know, I think it's safe to say that, not only, the disclosure by Trump and Musk during that interview, but Trump during his presidency was not particularly pro-labor, bad National Labor Relations Board appointments, judicial appointments. He opposed pro-labor legislation. This is a billionaire that is not, has not been friendly to labor at any time during his presidency or currently.
One thing I'll point out also is that one of the probably the singularly most important program right now for the Teamsters is an attempt to organize Amazon, and Amazon is. You know, they want to destroy UPS. They want to destroy the Postal Service. They want everything to go through them. And the Teamsters are putting considerable resource into an attempt to organize both the drivers and the warehouse workers. And they are reliant on decisions made by the National Labor Relations Board to allow them to proceed in some of these fights with the drivers. They're pretending that Amazon pretends that the drivers are contracted out and hires these small companies. But in fact, they're all directed, every single motion is directed by Amazon. So the NLRB, the board, has ruled that they are a joint employer. And that means that the Teamsters can organize them as Amazon workers. That's still in the process. But I think Sean O'Brien would be making a big mistake if he supported someone who would put in an anti-union board who would undermine their strategy.
Yeah, I think it's hard to imagine that he would do that. Let's just touch on, you mentioned that union workers, the labor workforce, all these 6% are union members, and that's down from what's something like 33% in the 60s. I mean, down, seriously, but still an important factor. And I think we can say an important factor in battleground states like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, where 15 to 20% of all voters in those states live in union households. These are gonna be very tight races, I think we can say. Your thoughts on the possibilities for union activity endorsements, et cetera, to make a difference in these swing states and nationally?
Well, one thing to keep in mind was that that 6% figure is extremely low and results from a whole bunch of things, including the fact that much of the manufacturing infrastructure that was unionized, closed, and went abroad. But still, we're talking about 14 million or more workers that are included in that 6%. So, and as you mentioned, they're concentrated in certain places. I think that, the unions have in many cases, the most important thing, although they give money to the candidates, but the most important thing that unions could do is by having 14 million members, mobilizing their members to do the door-to-door work, to do the phone banking work, that's worth gold, really. And when you think of these 14 million union members, they all have families. So if you think of their families, daughters, children, wives, husbands, etc., you're easily talking 30, 40 million people, maybe more, who are directly impacted by union families. So that's really core work. And I think that the unions this time need to be more aggressive than ever. And they have to talk the language that needs to be talked. You know, if you remember Bernie Sanders, when Bernie talks directly to the working class as working issues. Like Sean Fain, he labels the billionaires as the enemy. That includes the pseudo-billionaire Donald Trump, and includes Musk and all. They need to talk that way. When Bernie ran, for example, in West Virginia in 2020, he lost to Hillary. But he lost to Hillary overall, but in places like West Virginia, he won every single county in West Virginia in the primaries against Hillary. Why? Because he talked to those people. Then when the election happened, they all voted for Trump, you know? So I think the message from the unions has to be sharp. Our members have a direct interest in defeating Trump, and I think we can make the huge difference if we do it right.
We are speaking with Gene Breskin, a longtime labor organizer, a local union president with all sorts of international solidarity work. We'll take a little break, very short, for fundraising, and we'll be right back with you. You are listening to Community Watch and Comment, the Tuesday edition, and we need your help. The station needs your help desperately. I think we can say 202-588-9739 or WPFWFM.org. We need you to step up, folks. Show the love, show the support for this invaluable, I think we can say, community resource that is WPFW. We have a $500 goal. We're nowhere near it yet. We need your help. We love sustainers. You know, if you can give whatever amount, you can give $10 a month, $15 a month, you know, pass on those lattes and give it to WPFW. We need you to step up now. What do you think, Ray Valencia?
Well, I keep thinking about, you know, the amount of content and news that we get into each show. If you have a program, I know as a producer and as a programmer, and you have a news break, I mean, a commercial break every 7 minutes, your whole content is shaped around that. The kind of questions you can ask, the length of the answers you can allow for. And here at WPFW, you get a guest for like four, we put in 45, 50 minutes of content for every show. You're listening to more music per hour than you would listen to on a radio station, other on the FM dial. So every once in a while, we've got to bust in and ask you for a little help to send our way in order to keep the lights on and to keep going. And as volunteers, it's great to be here for you. And we really want, it's our passion to do this. And we just need a little bit of help from our community to help keep it going. And you can visit us at WPFWFM.org to make that donation, or 202-588-9739. And we appreciate anything you can offer right now.
Yeah, well put. We should say just a little bit of our history. It started in 1949. Pacifica did out in Berkeley. I think WPFW started 47 years ago. We're going strong, but we need your help. Pacifica is the model for listener-sponsored media. This has been well before NPR, well before PBS. We are the model for the idea that the community, that the listeners, the viewers would step up and support media. And it's Pacifica. It actually took me a while before I realized, oh my goodness, Pacifica, as in pacifism. You know, that was the founder was opposed to wars, I think, particularly in Korea at the time. And that is what we are about. And Lord knows, there needs to be a strong voice to counter the military-industrial congressional complex. Eisenhower, the coiner of the phrase, wanted congressional in there too, but his aides had him knock it out. So it just became the congressional, what the military-industrial complex, but Congress is in there too, and it's certainly the case. You know, I think there's something like five military arms lobbyists for every anybody else lobbying Congress when it comes to military appropriations. You know, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail, and by God, that appears to be what happening. But here at Pacifica Radio, WPFW, we are offering an alternative voice. Please help us out, 202-588-9739, or go online, wpfwfm.org. No amount is too large, no amount is too small. We accept PayPal, and we have a $500 goal, and we need your support immediately. Let's go back to our esteemed guest, longtime labor organizer, local union president, with all kinds of international connections, Gene Bruskin. You know, we were talking about, you know, only 6% of the workforce is unionized, 33% down from 33% in the 60s. But there are all kinds of new union ventures, Gene Bruskin. If you could talk about that, we're talking about Amazon, UAW in the South, a Union of Southern Service Workers. You know, there's all kinds of efforts, I think, that are very hopeful for expansion of the union movement.
Yeah, I think what we've seen, it hasn't reflected in the in the numbers yet. Partly because the process of fully becoming a union member not only includes an organizing drives against very anti-union employers, but then you have to have a long contract fight. And often employers that lose the union election try to take forever to resist getting agreeing to a contract. And so you're not formally a member of the union in a lot of the counts, until you have a union contract. But we're seeing stiff resistance in a number of places. Amazon workers starting in Staten Island and in Bessemer, Alabama, but now in Philadelphia and in Sacramento and Atlanta and Chicago, all over the country, independent workers groups are rising up at Amazon, and so are the Teamsters initiatives in many places. And Amazon is fighting it like mad, including in the one election that they lost at a huge facility of 8,000 workers in Staten Island. They just put dozens of lawyers to work. And now more than 2 years later, they haven't agreed to a contract. So the workers there are now going to up the ante in their fight against Amazon. But at the same time, Starbucks workers, starting one facility at a time and a group of facilities in Buffalo, finally reached out, rank and file member to enough workers so that they now have 500 Starbucks locations organized. And Starbucks finally gave into a very public and internal and external pressure campaign. They're starting to bargain a contract, and every day more Starbucks workers are unionizing in their locations all over the South, every part of the country. There was a strike, as everyone knew, by the writers, and resist the possible transformation of their industry to artificial intelligence. There was a strike of 50 or 100 in California that happened about a year and a half ago. So there are lots and lots of activity going on. And a lot of it is among young people. Maybe these are people who went through the financial crisis or Occupy, or maybe they went through they became changed through Bernie, the Black Lives Matter movement, immigrant rights, the women's movement. All these kind of movements that happened in the last 10 or 15 years change people, and they end up working someplace where they're getting screwed and they're used to standing up for the work for themselves and fighting back. And so we see this happening in many places, and it's very encouraging, and we just need to grow it. And meanwhile, some of the official unions are sort of also doing their homework. CWA has been doing some aggressive organizing. UAW is organizing in the South, in particular in some of the battery factories. We see other unions in there because a lot of the sort of move toward clean energy means creating cars that are electric and means building batteries and other kinds of equipment. So there's a lot of that kind of activity happening that's going to end up making a big change in labor.
Yeah, I mean, and we should note that Musk, who, you know, is making money from all sorts of different ventures, but is, I believe his initial venture was Tesla electric cars, who are not unionized. And Musk, what, used to be a supporter of the Democratic Party, but has switched to Trump. I mean, it's not surprising that has occurred. You know, it's kind of ironic, you know, in the sense that, you know, is Tesla electric vehicles or something that the Democrats have been promoting, but in fact, Tesla is non-union. It's kind of ironic, but I think it's important to talk about non-unionized workers. As we've been saying, 6% of the workforce, only 6% is unionized, and you've got those, you know, largely white disgruntled workers that are seem to be supporting Trump. What has Biden done, and what will Harris possibly do in terms of attracting those non-unionized workers to the Democratic Party, Gene Bruskin?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, Biden has done quite a bit, and Harris can take some of that credit on behalf of workers. The big problem has been that what he's done has not been communicated, not, of course, not much more has been done, but a lot of what he has also attempted to do has been undone by the Trump world and the Republicans. But for example, his infrastructure bill, which put I think $1 trillion into the infrastructure, impacts workers all over the country because it includes the kind of electrical work that, say, internet kind of updating requires, but also roads, highways. There's all this money in there that gives workers, union and non-union, work, and people need to hear about it. He's fought really hard to negotiate price controls on drugs, which is really Bernie Sanders' lead, and I think Kamala has picked up on that. The subsidies that were given during the pandemic that eliminated, for at least temporarily, a lot of poverty to families, tax credits and beyond, were eliminated by the Republicans. Kamala is trying to reinstate them with $2,500 payments for people who have children. And really just economically, the whole issue of women's rights and women's choice and around the issue of abortion that kind of medication is an economic issue, because absent those kind of health care choices, many women, young women, are thrown into poverty by having a child that they really are not ready to support. And that sort of is a lifelong cycle. And we see that happening frequently. And I think Kamala is really strong on that. I think what she really needs also to talk about is, it's fine to have no tips reported, which is what Trump said, taxed by tip workers. We really need a living wage. And that includes waiters and waitresses. The federal minimum wage right now is about $2.15 or $2.20 an hour for a waiter or waitress, which is 30 or 40 years old. The actual minimum wage is about $7.50 an hour. And even the campaign for the Fight for 15, which succeeded many places, and millions of people now in different situations are getting $15 an hour. That's out of date already. That's been in the last 5 years. So a living wage is something that I think Kamala needs to really support. That standard needs to easily be up to $20 an hour as a minimum. And in a situation where you have a small group of people like Bill Gates and others making really moving into the $1 trillion kind of amounts of money where they have hundreds of billions of dollars, this is a moment when the average worker should not be suffering. And that inequality that Sean Fain and others point out, that contrast that Bernie talks about between the growth of the billionaires and the continued low wages, Kamala has to make that point, not just the word corporate greed. We got to be explicit. People can hear that. I think that's important.
Right. And I mean, we should say, you know, the disparity is going back, what, to the 1920s. I mean, you know, capitalism left to its own devices tends to concentrate wealth. And generally speaking, we have left capitalism to its own devices. I think we can say wealth is concentrating, and government, as we, you know, supposedly learned in the New Deal, needs to step in and create some kind of level a playing field. I mean, do you think that Kamala Harris is doing enough in terms of addressing the need for on the ground support for the working class? I mean, you can imagine that Trump et al. Are going to say, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago, as Ronald Reagan used against Jimmy Carter? And arguably with inflation, workers are not better off. Of course, what Trump is offering is you know, in question, is questionable. But do you think Ms. Harris, Mr. Walls are offering enough in terms of a counter narrative for what can support working people, not just unionized workers, but all working people in this country?
I think we're starting for the first time to see some signs of what their program is. The turnaround has been so quick that we haven't really known. I feel like we have to continue to push because the issue of inflation is real, and there are many causes, and it's not so easy to say, you know, Joe Biden caused inflation. It doesn't work like that. But I think that we have to keep pushing her. She obviously recognizes that that's really going to be a crucial message. And I think that she's going to move more in that direction, but we haven't seen it yet. I think the unions need to really be pushing for everybody the whole issue of improving people's living standard. And I think one of the things she came out with, which she needs to develop, is the sort of gross disadvantage that places like grocery stores and the oil companies have taken around inflation, where inflation maybe is 4%, and they use it as an excuse to raise their groceries 10% or 15%. This is price gouging. And I think that's one way that she sort of recognized how much people are suffering and had a plan to do something about it. The other thing is that Trump's big program around all this stuff is tariffs. And what people don't really understand is if a Chinese good, for example, comes into the West Coast and it would be normally a $5 item, if you make a big tax on it, a tariff, as Trump calls it, becomes a $6 item, and that, or a $7 item. Therefore, when it gets into the store, it has to be sold at a higher price. China doesn't suffer at all. China still gets its $5 for the item. it passing it on to the companies that will pass it back on to the people. It will not help people. It just sounds like he's being tough. Whereas Kamala talking about controlling price gouging, that's a genuine program. And if it were implemented and taken seriously, I think it could make a difference. It's been done historically. In World War II, there was a wage and price board, and they wouldn't let the employers just do it while nobody was looking and people were fighting a war.
Yep, yep. And I think even President Richard Nixon had some kind of price controls.
Absolutely.
I mean, a Republican, yeah, I mean, it's
absolutely.
It's not necessarily outside the box. We're going to take a break for our fundraising drive and speaking with Gene Bruskin, a longtime labor organizer, local union president. Ray Valencia, what do you think? It just occurred to me, I'm feeling like, capitalism, I think we can say, it has a tendency to eat up everything, and it infects us on all sorts of levels. It infects how our government is run, most importantly, but it certainly infects the media. You know, if you listen to any regular station on radio or on television, which I tend to avoid, I mean, we're just inundated with commercials, but we're offering something different here on WPFW, an alternative to the capitalistic model. We are offering listener-sponsored non-commercial radio.
Yeah, you know, it's the way to show that you're a stakeholder in this, right? So we're the media. We try to present stories in a way that provides you an opportunity to really hear the story and the context behind it. We're not breaking in with a commercial every 6 minutes with 4 minutes of commercials, and how you structure a program built around hard breaks because you have to bring in the money from endorsements. And I think about the political season, the amount of money that's going to get raised for just basically ad buys. And it's, you know, it's an arms race. Well, I have an ad and you have an ad. So the prices just go up. There's not any more available time, right? So, you know, to send money in directions in that way that just kind of blows up money, I mean, it's kind of sad. But here at WPFW, we keep going. You know, I mean, we still have to keep the lights on. We need to move the station. We have transmitters to maintain, equipment to upgrade. And it's important for the community to participate in helping out once in a while. Very small amounts, like sustaining amount, maybe $5, maybe $10, whatever works for you in your budget, whatever you feel the value is of this type of programming. Also the great music that you hear here at WPFW-FM. Yeah, I mean, how many songs are you listening to on the FM dial without like 10 commercials playing in the back, you know? So yeah, you're getting so much more content. And I'm sorry that we have to bust in every once in a while and ask you to jump in and offer us cash, but we do really need it. And it goes a long way. I mean, your dollar goes miles for us.
Right. I mean, we should say, you know, this is, you know, most of the programmers you're hearing, including Ray and myself, we're not making a dime on this. This is a labor of love. Your dollar goes largely to our skeletal staff, I think we can say, and keeping the lights on, particularly when we're under, what appears to be some kind of coordinated cyber attack on various functions at the station. We need your help. Please show us the love. 202-588-9739 is the number to call, or you can go online, wpfwfm.org. Accept debit cards, credit cards, PayPal is also an option. We have a $500 goal. We are not cracking it, folks. We need you to step up. Please make the call, go online, and make the difference in terms of supporting this show, but most importantly, our beloved community resource, Jazz and Justice Radio, 47 years strong, WPFW. I want to touch briefly in the few minutes we have left, Jean Breskin, on the labor movement efforts in terms of Gaza. I think it's really important. This is a tradition that goes back. I think you were involved in opposition to the Iraq invasion. If you could touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. You know, historically, really since the founding of the AFL in the late 18th century, the labor movement has felt like its first loyalty is to its patriotism and defending the United States in any foreign venture. And the confusion about what is often labeled as our national interests are really actually sometimes our corporate interests. And it's like in places like Iraq, where there was an unnecessary war, it was really a war to control oil in that area. And for the first time, historically, we had a full-fledged movement that was called U.S. Labor Against the War, where hundreds of local unions around the country and then national unions debated and resisted, passed resolutions, demonstrated, and in every other way made it public that this war was not in the interest of the average worker. We were dying for it. We paid for it. We were forced, we were traumatized for it. Now, so many of those Iraqi veterans are the same people who are in the homeless camps, right? Because whether you killed somebody or somebody tried to kill you or your buddy died, these are horrible experiences. Right now, we have a really even more unprecedented moment with what's happening, the war in Gaza, where the United States doesn't have troops, but yet we're paying for it and we're supporting it in every way. We now have formed something called the National Labor Network for Ceasefire, NLNC, and it's laborforceasefire.org, where we have a group of national unions consisting of about 7 or 8 million workers that have come out against the U.S. role in supporting Israel's war, have called for a ceasefire, have called for no more arms for offensive purposes, call for humanitarian aid, have written public letters to President Biden, have created a website, laborforceasefire.org. This really is a break with more than a century of this confusion that what we are told is our national interest is really our workers' interest. There's no interest in the average worker, including the many Palestinian, Arab, and workers of color, using our money to kill Israelis. I mean, to kill Palestinians. There's no interest to the average worker here. It's offensive. And so this is a very encouraging moment that way. And I hope that learning and education, because there's also 300 local unions who have passed resolutions in support of ceasefire and ending arming the military and sending supporting Raytheon and Boeing and military companies like that who make a fortune off of this with our money and our government and sending it to Israel to kill Palestinians, even while we're negotiating a ceasefire. Every day more Palestinians are killed. So I think the labor movement has stepped up, and I'm hoping will continue to step up, not only for this war, but for future wars that are unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a break. I mean, I remember back in the Vietnam days, you know, major labor was supporting the war effort, and this is a change. We have a minute left, unfortunately, only a minute. Just if you could touch on your right. Second career as a writing and creating a musical theater. If you could just touch on that very briefly.
So I've written three musicals for and about workers. My most recent one It's called The Return of John Brown. You can go to thereturnofjohnbrown.com. We did a series of readings, including two of them at the home near Harpers Ferry where John Brown staged the raid. And we're now wanting to get it into full production. So anybody that's interested can go to thereturnofjohnbrown.com, find out more about it, and can reach out to me.
It's wonderful. I mean, I'll be curious to see how you're, you know, we think of John Brown as a, you know, an abolitionist, but you're tying it into labor as well. And it's an interesting combination and proposition. And we certainly look forward to future efforts on your part,
Thank you.
In the artistic realm. I've been speaking with Gene Bruskin. He's a 45-year veteran of the labor movement, is a local union president, organizer, and campaign coordinator for numerous local and national unions, and been very active in labor's support for ceasefire in Gaza, and on to a theatrical career. Gene, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, David. Thank you, Ray, and I hope everybody keeps contributing to your wonderful station. It's good for everybody.
Yeah, and thank you for the work that you do and your time. We really appreciate it.
So what do you think, Ms. Valencia?
I think we're running out of time. I think we're running out of time. And it's time to pick up that phone and call 202-588-9739. Make that donation. Send a message. Send a message that it's not okay to attack community radio, that it's not okay to attack Pacifica. We're talking about, we're anti-war. We're talking about, you know, alternatives to capitalism and community-supported radio and unions and, you know, a fair living wage, you know, things that are important to us. So send that message. Now is the time. We're not near our goal. We need to raise money for the station to make our move, to keep our infrastructure online, and to keep bringing you stories and music each day.
Yeah, we need you to show the love. You know, I think that we are showing the love in donating our a time to creating this program, as are almost all of the programmers that you're hearing on WPFW radio for jazz and justice in the greater DC area. It is a labor of love, and we need you to show the love and support this community effort. 202-588-9739 is the number to call. You can go online, wpfwfm.org. Credit, debit cards are work, and as does the PayPal, has an option. We have a $500 goal. We're nowhere near it. We need you to show the love, show the support for community radio, WPFW, and sustainers are maybe the optimal way to show your love. Then we have some sense going forward of what's going to be available to keep our lights on, to keep the transmitter percolating. So please show the love. 202-588-9739 or WPFWFM.org. We are going to have to end it there. This is Dave Rabin, joined by
Ray Valencia.
And it's been great being with you today. And we hope in the remaining minutes of this hour that you'll show support for our beloved WPFW. Have a great week. Stay safe. And we'll talk to you next week.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnestead. President Joe Biden delivered his valedictory address, kicking off night one of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, where he shed some tears, received a minutes-long standing ovation, and endorsed his vice president, Kamala Harris, for the party's presidential nominee last night, after he stepped aside for re-election just weeks ago amidst inside pressure.
It's been the honor of my lifetime to serve as your president. I love the job, but I love my country more. I love my country more.
He was joined by other high-profile Democrats to talk up Harris, including Hillary Clinton, the first woman candidate for a major U.S. political party.
On the other side of that glass ceiling is Kamala Harris raising her hand and taking the oath of office as our 47th president of the United States.
Harris also made an appearance and paid tribute to Biden's 50-year political career in his service as she forged a path forward.
Guided by our love of country, knowing we all have so much more in common than what separates us, let us fight for the ideals we hold dear, and let us always remember when we fight, we win. God bless you. God bless the United States of America.
During Biden's speech, he said there was more work to be done in the remaining months of his presidency, including ending the war in Gaza, which has become one of the most divisive issues of his presidency. During his speech, attendees unfurled a banner that said, "Stop arming Israel." Thousands rallied in Chicago outside the Democratic National Convention, marking day one, demanding an end to the war in Gaza and for other issues like abortion and LGBTQ rights. At least two were arrested for breaking through a fence set up by police near the site of the Democratic National Convention. Rylan Petras reports from Pacifica affiliate WZRD in Chicago.
Organizations from all over the country showed up to protest at the March on DNC 2024. All of them advocate for different issues, but the coalition's main demand is to stand with Palestine and to call for an end to U.S. aid to Israel. Andrew Maton, representing the People's Power Assembly in Baltimore.
We came out to march on the DNC, deliver the message that says start addressing the issues that are facing the masses of people in the U.S., joblessness, poverty, inflation, and most importantly, stop the genocide in Gaza.
Currently, main concern is the genocide and the occupation and the injustice.
Abraham Jaber came down to Chicago from Waukesha, Wisconsin. He says this is the least people can do for what is happening in Gaza.
We've always lived in that part of the world. We have lived in that part of the world with Jews and Christians as brothers and as family.
I'm Rylan Petras.
Former President Barack Obama and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff will speak on the second day of the DNC. Obama and Emhoff will turn the party's attention towards Vice President Harris and her face-off against Republican Donald Trump. Harris travels to Milwaukee today for a rally in the swing state of Wisconsin before returning to Chicago tonight. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Israel has accepted a proposal to bridge differences, holding up a ceasefire hostage release agreement drafted by President Biden to end the war in Gaza. But Blinken offered no specifics as he called on Hamas to also accept the proposal. He did not say whether the bridging proposal addresses concerns by Hamas. Officials familiar with negotiations say Israel wants a lasting military presence in a buffer zone along the Gaza-Egypt border and in an area Israeli forces carved out to cut off northern Gaza from southern Gaza. It's unclear whether Israeli control over these areas is part of a proposal the U.S. has called on Hamas to accept to break the ceasefire impasse. Monday was World Humanitarian Day. The United Nations held a ceremony noting last year. United Nations held a ceremony noting last year was the deadliest year for aid workers. 200 and